This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff One Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And today we are back. Happy New Year, because this is kind of the first full episode we've done in a while, and it's kind of short. I'm guessing, maybe not, but it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because we are continuing with our look into technology and women. Apparently, this is a thing we're doing that we didn't mean to, but it kind of just happened. Mm-hmm. And of course, we couldn't ignore the impact of social media in this conversation. And in our recent episode with Bridget, we talked about the current state of Twitter and all the things that are happening there, which led us to take a closer look at the history of hashtags. You know, it's one of those like, oh, where did that come from moment? And how women have not only been impacted by its use, but has actually shaped the effectiveness of hashtags as well. So we had to jump into that. But before we do, Annie, mm-hmm. do you use hashtags? Or as we know it, pound?
You know, one of the like funniest generational divides I've ever experienced is that of the, what, do you call it pound or do you call it hashtag? But also, like, you know, when you would go visit, maybe this is just me, but you would go to visit an apartment building and they'd give you the code, and I would just disregard the hashtag and just put in the number. But you had to put in the hashtag.
Yeah, yep.
And I would just get stuck out there. I do use hashtags. I think we're going to be talking about this more when I get to like the fan fiction section of the, because you know we have to have a fan fiction section of this.
Of course.
Because I feel like I generally use them in the way that is not, I use them in the humorous way, I guess.
Right.
Which they can, they are very, very useful in grouping information that is important, and especially around like protesting and very like big issues. But there is like the fun side of them, which I never want to forget, because I feel like a lot of times, as we rightly should, we talk about the more serious matters of this, but there are the fun kind of parts of it. And
right.
I really like coming up with the, you know, super long, ridiculous hashtag, or either, you know, like the humorous one where I'll, you know, hashtag nailed it and definitely did not nail it. so I do, but I usually use them in a less serious way, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, coming on to Sminty, the show, and I took over the social media. I was like, I can do this, which I found out I can't. I tried to study and look into what is effective and what isn't, because, you know, at that point in time, we thought social media would be a big part of podcasting. And not that it's not, but for us, it hasn't been as a big, our marketing people are like, don't worry about it type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really into it. I was like, I want to make this, I want to cultivate it, whatever, whatnot, because the host before me, you didn't take care of the social media. I think Bridget did, right?
Yes.
They were powerhouses. And mm-hmm. I still don't quite get them. But one of the things I looked up is how to use hashtags, mm-hmm. which we're going to talk a little bit about. Not really. We're going to mention again about being used. So I tried to be more serious with it and try to find all the hashtags. I had a kind of a nonprofit project that I did about women domestic violence survivors and telling their stories. And I used that as well to group the stories. And I used it for WordPress, which is not exactly the same thing. So we're going to talk about that as well. But, you know, realizing that this is how you reach out now. Like, it just doesn't happen just because. And it's almost harder when you don't use it. So you have to be very purposeful. So I did use it that way. As a person on my own, yeah, I do silly things as well. I will write full sentences as well because I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. But also, I do have a hashtag for Peach Muff Cousins. No one uses it but me.
Oh, I'll get in there.
Okay,
I'll
good, get in there. Good. I use that one often, just so you know. Because all of my Instagram is Peaches.
I hope it shows up when I type it in.
It will, guarantee.
Perfect.
So if y'all want to see pictures of my dog outside of following me, hashtag Peaches McFuzzin. You're welcome.
Perfect.
You know, I thought it would be interesting, too, if we looked at the trends, because, of course, a part of the search that you can do to kind of widen the scope outside of just the people you follow or follow you or now all the retweets and the likes that come our way. And I hate that, by the way, where you just see other people's likes. I'm like, why do I have to see this? Anyway, but some of the things that are trending for me specifically is Speaker of the House vote, which, yes, today is January 5th, 2023. It's a mess right now with this situation, so I do find it interesting. Another hashtag is hashtag National Bird Day. I did not know. Did you know?
No.
Okay, well, now you do. Another trend is hashtag House of Representatives, of course. And this is on Twitter because we are going to largely talk about Twitter, especially at the beginning, because this is kind of where it began, specifically the hashtag, not tags. We'll get into that once again. Yeah, so for Twitter, what's trending for you?
So I just had an interesting time. I haven't used Twitter on my phone in forever. I use it on my laptop. I'm the only person who uses a laptop, I feel like.
Oh, wow.
But anyway. Right now, it's Prince Harry.
Oh!
Speaker of the House vote, Republicans in ruin. I'm surprised there's something Star Wars related that is not, like, trending at all, but because I'm a Star Wars person, it's always up there.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe because there's no shows right now.
Well, yesterday Ezra was trending. I saw that. And I was nervous about it. Darth Vader is usually trending for me, and I can't quite figure out why. But I mean, I can, but I'm also kind of like, are this many people just tweeting about Darth Vader all the time? Probably.
I guess we're pretty similar, except for I don't have any Prince Harry, even though I've seen all the stuff. Ugh. Ugh. Monarchies. Yeah. Let's abolish them. Come on. JK. So we know of hashtags. We're getting there. I still, like, when you were talking about hashtag the door code, it really bothered me because I was like, it's pound. It's pound whatever. What are you talking about? If you tell someone a code, it's pound. How dare you? but yes, because it's been around, we haven't really talked about it too much, but we do want to take that deep dive and look at the history. So before we start, we're going to look back at the beginning of the hashtag. And when you look at the origin of hashtag, or again, pound, as it was known to me, most talk about the moment in 2007 when Chris Messina, who was at Twitter at the time, sent out a tweet asking how likely people would use hashtags for their tweets. And by the way, apparently the Twitter founders were not fans of either of these terms, hashtags or tweets. So that didn't happen until 2009. And they allowed that, like, yeah, it's officially that. That's fine. Whatever. They had to move on. And it was during around the same time, Stowe Boyd, a blogger, was using something similar on his own blog post and later stated, quote, and yes, y'all, I did a deep dive on their blogs from way back when. It's also worth noting that Messina and I were involved at the time in a Twitter and blog-based discussion about a membership in group versus what I call groupings. In a post at the time, Messina specifically referenced my writings on groupings. A grouping is a collection of people that share attributes in common, like the use of a certain tag on their blog post, or frequent a certain bar or a study such as martial arts. And he went on saying, my argument then see hashtags equal Twitter groupings was that tags in Twitter would wind up being used in the same way, an indication of the nature of the contents of the tweet. But in aggregate, everyone that uses the hashtags TEDx are a grouping, and that self-selected identification could be an important cultural marker. And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah. And Chris Messina himself talked about wanting to explore options like tags used in blogs and point to sites like Jaiku, which was similar. It was a similar social media site like Twitter, and it was created around the same time, and Flickr, which still uses tags to show trends and topics. And in fact, Messina took the tag San Diego Fire as a tester, which was a way for bloggers to inform the public of the ongoing wildfires at the time. And in his blog, Messina states, "I'm more interested in simply having a better eavesdropping experience on Twitter. To that end, I focused my thinking on contextualization, content filtering, an exploratory serendipity within the Twitterosphere."
Twittosphere.
I love this, like...
lingo?
Yes, the lingo. Oh, yeah. All right. That continued. "It occurred to me that IRC, or Internet Relay Chat, presents a proven model for these needs with its foundation on channels, and so that's what I'm generally going to call them. Now, in thinking about implementing channels, it was imperative that I not introduce any significant changes into the way that I currently use Twitter any more than I have for any other features that have been added to Twitter. For example, at replies or direct messages. Channels would need to be a command line friendly addition and one that would require absolutely zero web-based management to make the most of it."
And that's what he did. And it was, again, in 2009 that Twitter officially adopted this new way of communicating, which would expand onto other social media platforms. And for a more clear definition of its intention, quote, "The purpose of the invention was to create a meta tag that allowed users to track dynamic content in relation to a particular event or topic." So, because we've said this a few times and because we're going to go into it, we did want to talk about the differences between tags and hashtags. So again, we mentioned earlier, tags have been around and it was a part of the inspiration to hashtags. And if you look at Flickr today, the tags are still in use and helps categorize and even advertise an individual post or picture. I mean, I remember using it on my Zanga post. Yeah, I did. And it, honestly, it just clicked for me. I was like, oh yeah, that's what those are. This would be, and this would be around like 2000, 2001, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. And they still use them on things like Tumblr. And we use them when we write our metadata.
Right.
We have to write out keywords. And that's for searchability. So it's not quite this... Well, it's very similar, but it's not quite the same. But we have to write out, like, you know, this episode is about hashtags and it has this and this and this and this for every episode.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
And we have, in earlier episodes, of course, talked about the power of tags in fan fiction, like with AO3, Archive of Our Own, which is like one of the biggest names in fan fiction. More to come about it. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. But yeah, we talked about it in our episode. It was a Monday mini called A Love Letter to Fan Fiction, but it was mostly about AO3, where that was the big thing that differentiated AO3 was the tags. So you could search for very, very niche things. And as someone who's like posting on AO3 for the first time, like it'll show you if it exists. You can create one if it doesn't exist. People do like to have a lot of fun with them, as I said in that episode, especially like the no beta, we die like younglings. Very sad, but like the no beta, who is your editor? And they're funny. They're like one of my very favorite parts of that experience is just reading the creative tags that people come up with. And it's a really great way of getting a sense of something without reading it beyond the summary, because it's like the summary can only tell you so much without spoiling everything, but the tags can give you a real idea of like what you're getting into, and they can warn you if it's going to have something that might upset you. Like they're just a really effective way of being entertaining, but also conveying a lot of information. And you can search for something incredibly specific with them.
Right. I did read, as we were researching this, on one of the Reddit posts about fan fiction, that there was kind of a moment of like people being really upset for people adding the tags when it wasn't really there and or harassing people through those tags.
Yeah, well, so there is a... It's complicated to explain, but essentially, like, if you don't want to spoil people, you can archive your tags, or you can, like, basically the tags would change via chapter as opposed to, you know, the whole story. This makes probably no sense if you're like never had this experience. But essentially, like, you can archive your, like, author has chosen to archive warnings. But still, that usually means that they just don't want you to know there's going to be a major character death or whatever. And they'll tell you in the chapter that it happens. Like, hey, this is really not your thing. I personally haven't had experience with harassing people through tags. I've definitely seen tags where I'm like, oh, we would not get along.
Okay.
But I do have a very, like I've said, I feel like I've found a very niche, generally safe community
right. In
my Star Wars area. I definitely believe I can see it for sure. I can see it for sure. And there are things that are definitely like done in poor taste of like making fun of a character death. And, you know, not everybody's super happy that that character died or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's in my experience has been mostly delightful. And people will tell you if they're like, you shouldn't have that tag, you should take it down. That's also my experience. Probably
right.
Not everyone's, but
which is interesting because that is very specific in that you can request that. That's kind of rare, especially with the hashtags, because you just kind of either ignore it and move on or something like that. But it's necessary for you to dive into a thing. So that's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, I could talk about it forever, but we need to talk about more hashtag stuff. The widespread use of tags and hashtags have been adopted by most social media platforms, even though Twitter initially received backlash at its beginning. Messina said, quote, in the beginning, people really hated them. People didn't understand why we needed hashtags. And the biggest complaint was that people just didn't like how they looked.
It is interesting because it is highlighted, so you're able to click on it and it'll take you to a kind of a page of other posts that has that tag. Again, I have to admit, I was one of those people. I even mocked the usage of them by making them the most ridiculous tag because I was like, what is this? Oh, hashtag. And the fact that it's part of our vernacular. Literally, people say hashtag something. Of course, usually it's tongue-in-cheek, but I've definitely seen people seriously saying it and it's become part of our vocabulary, which is very interesting.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the backlash is when, especially like in my realm, like health, mostly women health creators were being like hashtag
right.
blessed or whatever.
Right.
That became a real joke.
Hashtag blessed.
It's been we did an episode, well, Pass hosted an episode on it, so you can check that out if you want to. But yeah, that didn't change the trajectory of how important this initiative would be for our social media today.
Right. So Let's talk about what's happening today. As hashtags took off and is now used for a variety of reasons, including becoming an influencer, which we've talked about a lot. If you look up hashtags today, and of course, we did, there are articles after articles on how to use hashtags to build up your following and your brand. Like I said, I looked those up myself when I initially started with Sminty. Social media coordinators often use current trends to promote a brand or a person in order to gain more followers and more viewers. And this equals money, obviously, and or brand deals or all those things. Many articles online today tout a how-to with the power of the hashtag. One article written for entrepreneurs say of hashtag, the hashtag that ubiquitous pound sign followed by keyword are part of the language of social media. Who better to use these hashtags than entrepreneurs, right? And then they say hashtags are simple, honest, and explosive way to increase your engagement as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I will say we recently discussed the cold emails we get a lot at the Sminty email address. And a lot of them are, we can maximize your social media presence. We can work your hashtags, which I find very fascinating. And uses for hashtags have already been adapted for newer social media like TikTok. TikTok takes the usage of hashtags a step further by using it as part of an individual's algorithm with hashtags like FYP or the For You page, and also helping to create specific subcultures within its system. Some of the popular subcultures include hashtag cottagecore, hashtag moms of TikTok, and hashtag FikTok, which often are geared more towards women or female identifying users. Hashtags are so widely used on TikTok. TikTok business sites use it as a way of advertising to creators to hop on the trend. For example, in August of 2021, they tweeted the number of hashtag views, such as hashtag small business, to encourage small business to join TikTok and to use the platform to grow their businesses. And just in case you were wondering, hashtag small business had 33.8 billion views at the time.
Right. Huge. But one of the uses of hashtags that had us thinking about the origins of hashtags happened to be the usage of hashtag activism. Currently on social media platforms, the hashtag say their names to save their lives has been circulating to publicly discuss the revolution occurring in Iran and the many people who've been kidnapped and detained due to their protesting or supporting the protests occurring there now. And just a reminder, as far as I believe still, Iran has cut off internet access for those in Iran. So many of the activists are outside of Iran trying to relay what is happening so that we are in the know. And hashtag activism has been around for over a decade now, if not longer, and even has its own Wikipedia page. And according to the Wikipedia page, hashtag activism, quote, refers to the use of Twitter's hashtag for internet activism. The hashtag has become one of the many ways that social media contributes to civic engagement and social movements. The use of hashtag on social media provides users with an opportunity to share information and opinions about social issues in a way that others, followers, can interact and engage as part of a larger conversation with the potential to create change.
And it has done that. Some of the biggest hashtags used for activism was at the hands of women, more specifically women of color. The conversation of hashtag activism is such a large topic in the social justice movement. Books have been written in studying this specific subject, including one written by Sarah Jackson, Moya Bailey, and Brooke Foucault-Wells titled Hashtag Activism, Networks of Race and Gender Justice, which was published in 2020, which we do want to talk about throughout the rest of the episode. Here's a description from mitpress.mit.edu. In this book, they explore how and why Twitter has become an important platform for historically disenfranchised populations, including Black Americans, women, and transgender people. They show how marginalized groups, long excluded from elite media spaces, have used Twitter hashtags to advance counter-narratives, preempt political spin, and build diverse networks of dissent.
Throughout the book, the authors speak of the impact of hashtags throughout the current movements that have affected throughout the U.S. And in the book, they define the usage of hashtag and its uses. They write, quote, hashtags, which are discursive and user-generated, have become the default method to designate collective thoughts, ideas, arguments, and experiences that might otherwise stand alone or be quickly subsumed within the fast-paced prestige of Twitter. Hashtags make sense of groups of tweets by creating a searchable shortcut that can link people and ideas together.
The origin of hashtag activism sprung up around 2011. It is noted that one of the first usages of the activism could be pointed to the hashtag Arab Spring, which started spreading in early 2011 in order to bring awareness to the anti-government protests in North Africa and in the Middle East. The overall usage of hashtags has created more space for disenfranchised voices to be heard. In the book, they talk about the importance of the platform and the importances of hashtags for the marginalized community. They write, members of these marginalized groups in the tradition of counterpublics use Twitter hashtags to build diverse networks of dissent and shape the cultural and political knowledge fundamental to contemporary identity-based social movements.
And we wanted to take some time to talk about specific examples of some of this hashtag activism. Some of the more influential and viewed hashtags used have been for social justice movements. For feminist movements, we have hashtag Me Too, hashtag Yes All Women, hashtag The Empty Chair, and hashtag Why We Stayed. And more recently, hashtag Shout Your Abortion, which has created a larger narrative around different movements within the feminist movement. These movements are often considered to be, as we said, a part of the feminist Twitter or feminist TikTok, which typically provides space to feminists to move forward in the movement or the current issues at hand. Hashtags like ES All Women garnered a global level of attention, which at one point, the hashtag being tweeted by more than 1 million accounts. Of course, with another hashtag trending at the same time, hashtag Not All Men.
Right. And hashtags like Not All Men and Men's Rights have been used as a response to the different feminist hashtags, and they continue to be a part of the conversation in that specific subculture. But there were others that were considered ally hashtags like The Empty Chair, which was created by journalist Elon James White, which was created after the Bill Cosby hashtag. The hashtag was created after the publishing of the powerful cover photo of 11 women and an empty chair in reference to Cosby's assault accusation. The empty chair has been used to, quote, signify the 11 other women who have accused Cosby of assault but weren't photographed for the magazine, but was also representative of the many women who didn't come forward. The hashtag was eventually used for anonymous accounts of assault and harassment many women experienced but couldn't come forward. With the movement was a monumental one for survivors. As Jackson Bailey and Wells write, published over the course of several days, hashtag The Empty Chair worked primarily to show the scale of sexual violence, the scale at which survivors are silenced. It did so through two types of discourse, one affirming belief in survivors and the value of women's experience, regardless of when or if they come forward, and the second calling attention to the often invisible scope of the problem.
Right. Of course, this is a bigger conversation about allyship, and we're going to kind of get into it in a minute and how it may go awry. But another subset comes from what is typically regarded as Black Twitter. Movements like hashtag Black Lives Matter or BLM, hashtag Say Her Name, and hashtag I Can't Breathe trended due to the continued violence against the Black community, often at the hands of law enforcement. And much like the feminist hashtags, these were typically started by women of color. Like most issues when it comes to social justice and social movements, it's women of color, typically Black women, who start these trends and hashtags. It's all about intersectionality, and that's what they do. And as the research shows, Black Americans actually make up the majority of Twitter users. And this was, of course, as of 2020. Things have changed. We need to get those statistics because things are rapidly changing in the world of Twitter. We know this, and many have made a mass exodus. So how have these hashtags helped the marginalized communities? As we said before, many of these powerful hashtags and trends begin with Black women and oftentimes goes into larger movements outside of the platforms. It allows for community among the different marginalized groups and solidarity, which is oftentimes unseen during times of distress. An example of that that I actually didn't know much about until recently is hashtag fast-tailed girls when there was conversation of young Black women being too loose or too fast. And having a conversation of them being sexualized at an early age and just being sexualized just for existing. And it brought a larger camaraderie among Black women to be able to speak out against the misogynoir based on this. So it was an amazing movement to see. And it's so important for us to look at because we don't hear about these conversations and it doesn't take off unless something like a hashtag really happens.
There is also a chance of preserving history and seeking visibility and justice for those who may never receive it by courts. We've talked about that before as well. As the authors write in the hashtag activism book, quote, a similar commitment to historical memory is seen in hashtag say her name tweets highlighting historical cases of state violence against Black women, such as the 1984 killing of Eleanor Bumpers by the NYPD, alongside more recent ones. As a digital utterance engaging a variety of political demands around visibility, state violence, feminism, and racial justice, hashtag say her name plays two primary roles on Twitter. First, it eulogizes women of color killed as a result of misogynoiristic violence, insisting that their lives and stories matter. On Twitter, this came to include cis and trans Black and Latinx women and girls killed by police or while in police custody, as well as those killed as a result of a larger culture of neglect regarding the safety of Black and brown women. Second, it demands visibility of these stories in the name of specific interventions into systemic and intersectional forms of oppression. This visibility is frequently accompanied not only by the invocation of names and stories, but also by statistics, political demands, and calls for policy interventions.
Right. And oftentimes we can see it of the result of what happens. One of the prime examples would be hashtag Breonna Taylor. We saw a result of what went on, including the trials and the arrests and the firing and the corruption that happened years later. And it is because of hashtags like Say Her Name that has really brought about a change in what we see and what we witness and the accountability that sometimes is and sometimes isn't there. And I think that's a bigger part of that conversation. As in fact, they talked about in this book that hashtag Trayvon Martin still exists today and still used today in order that we still remember what has happened and the tragedy and the injustice that happened because of that incident and making sure that we have a conversation of the bigger implications. And I think it really brought an awareness to these injustices that hadn't been around in the last, you know, century until the last decade of some of these movements. So I think it's also a bigger conversation in that. And of course, again, you have to credit Black women who are the ones at the forefront of bringing this about. No matter what we say about the Black Lives Matter organization, there's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of conversations about being a bit kind of crumbling, but the actual movement in itself has held strong and has meant a lot for those who have no voice and those who are oftentimes oppressed. So you can't ignore the impact of it all. Of course, there are some good and bad with this, and we want to talk about that. As we know, as great as some of these hashtag activism is, there's also the bad. As we talked about, not all men wasn't great. There's also talking, when we had that conversation with women, white women taking on, like, no, you know, feminism and forgetting that there is an intersectionality to it and being called out and then making excuses. There are a lot of conversations about that. And then, of course, we have the not-so-great hashtags that we wish didn't exist and oftentimes are detrimental, racist, very, very damaging and violent even, that have existed as well. So you can't have one without the other. However, there has been implementations used in order to redirect. And one of that would be the hashtag flooding. And if you're wondering what hashtag flooding is, it's the act of hijacking a hashtag on social media platforms to change its meaning, which apparently has been around for years. And that's from the article 2020 was the year activists mastered hashtag flooding from Mashable.com. We talked about the power of fangirls and fans. And one of the things that we can't ignore is that the BTS fans did some things, including flooding Donald Trump-related hashtag in order to rally with the gay community. They took their own spin on the Proud Boy, hashtag Proud Boys hashtags. It was beautiful to see because it was ridiculous and funny at the same time because all you would see is pictures of BTS. I think that's when I really understood how powerful the fan groups really were. Another one would be hashtag My NYPD. Originally was something that the police department tried to do to look better and asking for good stories or good interactions, instead got flooded with accounts of assault or harassment or police brutality. It did not go well. And I think there was even one tweet that says, I don't think you thought this through, in reply to the NYPD request. But of course, that can also turn for a flip. You can also have that in different ways, which we've seen recently. The Elon Musk stands are out there, and the minute they must have it like on alert. If anyone talks bad about Elon Musk, they come out in droves. I was kind of floored by that because I don't know many people that treat him as this god, which apparently for some are. Of course, we're not talking about bots, so that's a whole different conversation. And that's the other part to that, is that some of this flooding is coming from bots as well. Another example of the flooding that was really great, White Lives Matter, that happened after, in response to Black Lives Matter, got really reamed over by BTS fans as well. And you love to see it. You love to see it, as well as the QAnon stuff. But again, that also came with Pizzagate, which had its own boom. So there's a conversation about whether or not this is great or concerning, and what does it look like in the future? And for flooding, who knows? It's according to who kind of controls that narrative, who kind of controls that social platform, who has the most monetary gain. Of course, you know, Facebook was a part of that problem when they refused to take down misinformation because they were making too much money off of it. So there's kind of this whole level of conversations.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
As we kind of wrap it up, we want to talk about the good, the bad, and the uncertainty when it comes to social media with this activism as well, hashtag activism. We know that the activism does bring out community and organizations, things that you may never know about. One of the first things I saw during like the Black Lives Matter protests, during Ferguson with Michael Brown being murdered, as well as the death in New York, we saw people coming together. And one of the best ways that happened was through the hashtag Black Lives Matter, organizing and creating protests all around the country and seeing that support and coming together. We saw that with the Women's March, really coming together as a country and having the rally. As in fact, we know there's another Women's March coming up, I believe January 22nd. We'll have to go back and look. That's seeking to have a conversation or at least protest against the Roe v. Wade overturning. And those are some amazing, amazing things that we want to keep looking at it. And if we look towards Black women, they really are the ones that have used these in the most creative, succinct ways and tactics in releasing these hashtags. Of course, we have to look at the bad. As we talked about, there's a lot more conversations about possibly being watched by police states, essentially. We know Iran really watches it. There were several arrests based on people's posts in supporting protesters, and they were arrested just for that, and that is concerning. There has been groups where a specific hashtag was made by police, by law enforcement, in order to catch people, essentially, in order to get names, in order to surveil. The Standing Rock protest had many of the police officers trying to find individuals to arrest, to harass, all of those things. But the good news on that was there was many supporters who also checked in and did the hashtags in order to confuse and bombard anybody who would use those types of methods. But it is concerning, obviously, the continued harassment. We know that if you take a stance and if you link to that, again, Elon Musk supporters right now are on full 100% going after anyone and everyone. Again, don't know the bots. Maybe there are. Hopefully they don't come after me. I'm not important, though. But I've seen it. I've even seen recently in conversations for Black women, to support Black women. We know the trial for Megan Thee Stallion just happened. He was found guilty. But to watch what was happening on Twitter, to watch the hashtag Megan Thee Stallion, hashtag believe her, believe Black women, they were attacked every single time. There would be one-to-one where some misogynoir would be coming out full force. And it was based on these hashtags. It was really, really gross and ugly. They continued to harass individuals who would support. They continued to harass her to the point that she said she regretted doing this. So there's a lot to talk about with the bad. And then there's the uncertainty. I talked about earlier the allyship that has happened with hashtags like the empty chair, he for she, all of these things. But unfortunately, a lot of these hashtags don't have a plan with it. They don't have a call to action with it. They are just more of like, I want to tell you my story, and I want to tell you I'm not as bad as them, which happened a lot, which is very counterintuitive to what needs to happen. That's the conversation of like, you're not understanding what hashtag activism was originally intended to be, and you're now overtaking the original intent, which was a call to action for those to come together. So it's kind of like, I get what you're trying to do, but good intentions aren't always great. And that's that conversation that we need to have. Why are you creating this? Are you doing this in support, or have you taken over something that you shouldn't be taking over? Have you made the story about you? Or are you taking credit? Alyssa Milano is kind of a prime example of that. She took a movement that wasn't a hashtag yet, but it was a movement that Tarana Burke started in, I believe, 2007 of Me Too, and took it onto Twitter and took credit for it until she got called out. I think she would say she didn't. She was just trying to push forward a movement, which was great, but you have to be able to give credit. And again, this is kind of the erasure that happens over and over and over again with these movements. Oscar So White, another one of those kind of trying to change those narratives, which is really, really great. But then it kind of also falls apart when nothing changes. And it seems to stay the same. So there's a lot to be said about that. As we're watching Twitter, it seems to be going. I don't know. I know nothing about Twitter outside of what I read. It has changed. Obviously, the platform has changed greatly. But when it comes down to it, because Twitter was at the forefront, essentially, of the hashtag movements, it seems uncertain about what we're going to see with these types of hashtag activism. What does it look like? TikTok has created its own brand of hashtags, of the use of hashtags. So it will be interesting to see how it evolves, and then how and whether or not they're going to include the people who were the big proponents to this, which is women of color, Black women.
Right. And I think something like this is so important to talk about because, you know, even if, as we said in that episode of Bridget, you don't use Twitter, you know, like, about these movements we're talking about. You've seen, experienced the outcomes from them. You've heard of them, and they have become a part of our vocabulary and vernacular. And, you know, they can be these really creative, fun things, but also just these real tools for change that are, it's always, good to keep in mind where that comes from, the people who you should credit, and just how you're using them. Because you never know. You should always check your hashtag before you post it.
Right.
That it's not associated with something else that you don't want it to be associated with, or taking conversation away from something you shouldn't be taking conversation away from.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Well, this was a fun one. This was a fun one. And we do have a lot more of this technology stuff coming along. So look out for that. Also, yeah, just let us know if you've got any thoughts about hashtags, hashtag history, favorite hashtags. That would be wonderful. You can email us at stephaniemomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at StuffOneNeverToldYou. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina.
Hashtag thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.